Welcome back to Outside the Room. I'm CG Funk, your host. I would like to give a big thank you to Massage Heights, who is the exclusive sponsor for this program. And if you're seeking a career in massage or skincare that truly nurtures you and sustains you, please visit the Massage Heights website to learn more. Massage Heights Culture of Care is all about supporting therapists and estheticians in the work that they do every day. You can find more information about this at www.massageheights.com/careers. Now, last episode, we talked with Dr. Tiffany Field, the founder of the Touch Research Institute at the University of Miami School of Medicine. Dr. Field became interested in touch therapy after giving birth to a premature daughter. So the first studies that she oversaw were on promoting the development of preemie infants with touch. She's the author of 30 books, including Touch and Massage Therapy Research, has written 400 journal papers, and received numerous awards honoring her work and research. And we are just so delighted to have her back with us today. Well, welcome back, Dr. Tiffany Field. Hello, Dr. Field. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you doing, CG?
I'm great. We had such a good conversation. In our last episode, Massage Makes Me Happy and Healthy Day was such a fun celebration. I'm just so glad that you're a part of that initiative. But I did want to talk to you more about the Touch Research Institute in this interview. Does that work for you?
That's fine.
All right. Because I love some of these stories and I've heard them before, but I never get tired of listening to them. So the Touch Research Institute at the University of Miami School of Medicine was founded in the early 90s after your first research on preemies had been conducted, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Yep. So I love this story. So around 1990, you were introduced to a benefactor that heard about your work with premature infants, and that meeting resulted in the seed money to start the Touch Research Institute. So please tell us the whole story, because it's such a great story.
Well, there was this great leader, the CEO of Johnson & Johnson, named Jim Burke. And he was a bit of a visionary. He felt that if there was more touch in the world, there would be less disease and fewer wars. And so he was impressed by our premature baby research. And he said, so what about having a research institute on touch? And so we were very happy that he suggested that. And with $250,000, he gave to the institute to start the institute, actually. That was fun meeting him. And he was very supportive for many, many years.
And a little bit about Jim Burke, because I know that he's been named by Time Magazine, you know, this is probably 20 years ago, as one of the greatest CEOs of all time. And he was the right one that took Johnson & Johnson through the big Tylenol scare in the 80s, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was also on more corporate boards than any other American in history. He was on 16 different major corporation boards, including after he left Johnson & Johnson, he started an organization called Partnership for a Drug-Free America, where he worked very, very energetically with parents and school systems to get kids off drugs or to prevent kids from taking drugs. So he had so much effect, a positive effect on so many corporations and so many institutions.
And I think the story goes is that you were going on the Oprah show, if I'm not mistaken, you were a guest on Oprah, and that's where you met him.
Yes. I was on Oprah. It was a show about whether touch should be happening in the school system, whether teachers should be allowed to touch children. And there were two sides to that issue. There were actually teachers, like I remember the violin teacher saying she did not touch. She the word was we teach, not touch. And I I used to play the violin. So I was wondering, how can you teach someone how to play the violin without putting your arms around them and helping them hold the violin and hold the bow? And so it was kind of a combative session. And there were parents there who wanted their kids being touched and their parents there who didn't want their kids being touched. And what resulted in the end was the head of the National Education Association basically mandated school systems not to touch kids. So we've had that mandated place for a very long time. And it's been awful that teachers haven't been able to touch kids.
I think it's interesting that you were in that conversation, though, because you Touch Research Institute hadn't even started yet. You had done these preliminary preemie studies. Well, not preliminary, but they were studies on the premature infant. And you were just learning about touch yourself. So it's interesting that early in that part of your career, you were already seen as this touch expert. I mean, it's almost like you were born into this world to be an expert on, you know, the benefits and the importance of human touch. And it's interesting. I don't think you envisioned your career like that when you were in grad school. No?
No, I didn't really. But it's interesting you say that because I started in nursery school when I was 3 months old. And so I'm sure I had lots of good hands on me, got lots of good affection from a lot of people, not just the teachers, but my peers.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, that's 30 years ago and we still haven't come back to questioning that rule, you know, that the National Education Association made. I'm wondering if we ever will. You know,
well, unfortunately, this pandemic has exacerbated that whole problem. First, because kids were in school for a long time and now they're back in school. And I met with a high school group last week on Zoom, and they were all sitting 6 feet away from each other in masks and, you know, obviously not touching each other.
And, you know, the last few years, we talked about this a little bit on the first episode that we did, but about how the pandemic has created anxiety, stress, and insomnia. And I'd love for you to talk a little more about what can happen to the body long term if we had to continue down this route of this touch deprivation, I guess you would call it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's several ways that we can be damaged by this. One is that we tend to become more aggressive when there's less touch involved. And we've done studies on that and know that kids who are getting more physical affection are less aggressive physically and less aggressive verbally. We also know from animal research that if you separate two monkeys and you put plexiglass between them and they can see each other, smell each other, hear each other, but they can't touch each other. When you remove the plexiglass, they kill each other. And so we have lots of evidence of lots of aggressive things that are happening during this pandemic. So that's one really terrible thing. And the other relates to wellness and illness. You know, if you're getting less touch, you're more likely to get sick.
It's always the simple things that we just take for granted and don't think make a huge impact in our lives when they really, really do. In your studies that you've done specifically on massage research, because I know we're going to talk about a few more different areas that you've done research on. There's an important factor in the level of touch or pressure. Mm-hmm. That actually makes the difference. Tell us about that.
Yes. Well, we've done studies with infants and with adults where we compare moderate pressure, which is what we've come to describe as moving the skin. You don't really have to measure that. You can just see that when you're moving your hands across your skin, that you're moving the skin. So that's the index of moderate pressure, as opposed to light pressure, which is just very lightly skimming the surface, very light stroking. And so we compared those and we monitored brain waves, we monitored heart rate and blood pressure and so forth. And we found that the moderate pressure, the moving the skin condition, resulted in decreased heart rate and decreased blood pressure and in theta waves, which indicate relaxation. Whereas the light stroking was more like a tickle stimulus. It was arousing. And so heart rate increased, blood pressure increased. And we got more beta and alpha waves, which are more in the direction of arousal. So those two different types of touch have different effects. And for health reasons, because of the stimulation of the pressure receptors being necessary to get those healthy effects, we have continued to use moderate pressure, moving the skin stimulation.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's really interesting because when I went to massage school and became a massage therapist, it was 1992. So my family thought I was nuts. You know, they were thinking, you're doing what? What, you know, you're leaving this career in sales and marketing to do what? But my dad had been in the military. And so he spent a lot of time overseas and he had exposure to different things in the 50s, like acupuncture and acupressure and massage, you know, in the more Asian countries where he was than most people had in the 50s. So he used to love me to come home and give him massages. I mean, he was just all about it, where my mom didn't like to be touched. And so I just thought that just those two different personalities, but my dad liked that nice medium pressure, but I could do cranial sacral therapy on my mom, just gently hold her head, you know, for an extended period of time. So it's interesting that we all have different, you know, comfortability levels with it. And so I wonder if
And babies actually show that too. Babies have their preferences already at the newborn stage of how much pressure they like, where they like being massaged. Some kids like their heads done, some kids like their feet done. So yeah.
And I think it's really fascinating to me that, you know, a big shout out to all your massage therapists and estheticians out there who provide this wonderful work every day, that, you know, you can really just sit and massage someone's feet and make a tremendous difference in their whole body. It doesn't have to be this full body experience, although that's really nice, you know, but just the act of massaging feet or hands actually makes a physiological difference as well, if I understand that correctly.
Yes, that's definitely true. And in fact, we've done a number of studies on the hands. We haven't done any studies on the feet, except we did find that the fetus will respond to massaging the feet and the hands as early as 22 weeks gestation. But the hand massages that we've done are on carpal tunnel, on just hand arthritic pain, and they're very effective.
Yeah, and they're getting those same results. Obviously, you're studying a certain disorder, you know, or dysfunction to say, does massage relieve this, you know, pain or give it more mobility? But then just working on the hand can affect the whole system of the body by doing the other, you know, things that you shared with us. So I just find that interesting, really interesting. Now, there's other research that you've done, though, and I love these. So first of all, I want to talk about the visual research on touch that you've done with teenagers. You took some trips and you visually, you know, studied teenagers in different countries about touch. So go.
Yeah, that was my excuse to go to Paris every summer. We actually did preschoolers and adolescents. The preschoolers we observed on playgrounds, and the adolescents we observed in McDonald's restaurants, because both countries have McDonald's restaurants and so forth. And so with the preschoolers, we found that the Parisian preschoolers were given more physical affection by their parents on the playgrounds, and the kids were less verbally and physically aggressive as compared to kids on playgrounds in Miami. And when we looked at the adolescents in McDonald's over in Paris, they were just hanging all over each other, giving each other back rubs, holding hands, giving hugs. As opposed to the Miami adolescents who were doing a lot of self-massage, a lot of, you know, flipping their hair, cracking their knuckles, but not doing, you know, physically affectionate things towards each other. And the Miami, again, adolescents were more verbally and physically aggressive than the Parisian. So those data, I think, are human data that basically support the monkey data that I sometimes refer to, where monkeys get very aggressive when they can't touch each other.
It's so interesting. And then on top of that, you've done research studies on movement, different movement modalities. What are some of the details that you found on those?
We've done research on yoga, comparing yoga with massage, and found that yoga had very similar effects as massage, which is not surprising because think of yoga as stimulating pressure receptors. We've also done studies on a movement that it's called euteny, and it's very popular in Europe. And it's basically you just move around with someone else. And so it's sort of like a dance, actually, dancing with someone else. And that was very effective. But again, it involves stimulating pressure receptors. We think that's what the common underlying mechanism is for all of these kinds of movement and massage studies.
Now, I know that the Touch Research Institute has now been, I don't want to close down. You're not doing any current research studies, but are you still involved? Like, what are you doing these days to stay involved?
Yes, we closed the institute during the pandemic because people weren't willing to have their preemies in massage studies, and we were just finishing two studies, one on hip pain and one on veterans who were having experience with post-traumatic stress disorder. And we finished those studies just before the pandemic started, because during pandemic, people didn't want to volunteer to be in massage studies. But I'm continuing there. As I mentioned, we did a huge survey during COVID that involved touch and touch deprivation, as well as depression, anxiety, PTSD, sleep problems, et cetera. And that resulted in, I think we counted the other day, 168 press interviews, mostly about touch deprivation. And interestingly, most of the interviews were by English-speaking folks in the UK, in Australia, New Zealand, and in the US. I say interesting because those are less touchy societies than, say, some groups in France and Italy, for example. And yet, you know, so you can think about the French and the Italians being more touch deprived because they touch each other more usually in you know, pre-pandemic times. But it was interesting to me that it's really the English and the Americans that are more concerned about touch deprivation. Anyway, so we're continuing those studies, and now we're studying long COVID, which is a problem that's persisting, even though the infection rates have been falling. The long COVID is a significant problem for about 30% of folks. And so there's a lot of research that can go on, and hopefully we'll be able to introduce massage for these folks that have long COVID and reduce some of the problems they're having, like they're experiencing brain fog and fatigue and dizziness, so forth.
And so 30%, that's an amazing percentage of overall COVID cases. So you're just studying it to figure out what the long-term effects are, but not how to address those long-term effects at this point.
We're looking at the long-term effects, but we're trying to predict which kids, we're focused on kids, which kids are going to get long COVID, or for which kids is COVID going to persist. Because once we know that, then we can introduce interventions to hopefully prevent long COVID from occurring.
Yeah, it's been a tough two and a half years for, you know, for our entire planet, and the various societies, you know, across the globe. What's the light at the end of the tunnel, Dr. Field? Give us all a pep talk.
Well, I just hope people will do what you said, you know, engage in a lot of self-care. One of the things that we're finding is a huge buffer for all the stress related to COVID is exercise. And so we're, you know, in addition to recommending lots of self-care, we're recommending that exercise should be a huge part of self-care.
And I think, you know, if someone's starting a self-care routine, you know, they just wake up and they say, I have to take better care of themselves. I always like to approach those things with, you know, one thing at a time, and don't feel like, you know, you have to run 5 miles. I mean, if you haven't even been walking around the block in the last 2 years, maybe you just start there, right? It's like, do you have any advice? You know, baby steps, I guess, you know, start at the beginning. What would be your advice on that?
And the other thing is that the outside exercise with someone else was the most effective. So, you know, you can still keep your social distance and wear your mask, but it's important to try to exercise with someone else.
I think
just like it's important to massage each other.
Yeah.
Now, partner massage should be very big these days.
It's interesting, too, because one of the saving graces for me, I believe, during COVID, especially when my family's in California and I'm in Arizona. And of course, you know, we would see the neighbors out walking. So I wasn't totally isolated, but just hiking every day. I mean, hiking every day, running into other people on the trail that maybe I didn't even know, just giving a wave. I think that, you know, that really helped, you know, placate those feelings of isolation, you know, and stress over, you know, the whole pandemic. Listen, you know, outside the room is for massage therapists and it's for estheticians. And we put this programming together and we bring on guests that we believe have special messages to share with these two wonderful types of folks that have these really beautiful careers where they're making a difference in people's lives every day through their healing hands and compassionate hearts. And I would love for you just to, in closing, give a message to massage therapists and estheticians out there.
Well, I think that they, you know, it's wonderful that it's still the fastest growing career, even despite this pandemic. And I just really applaud them for everything that they're doing. I think they have to continue that. I think they have become bigger educators during the pandemic because they, you know, as they had less time in their places of massage, they were also teaching people how to do that on Zoom. And I think that's a very important function to get it out there so parents can be massaging their kids and couples can be massaging each other and so forth.
That's great. And, you know, one other thing is that it's a little more difficult to find your research papers from the Touch Research Institute these days. Did you know that they've archived them? So the actual mm-hmm. website for TRI doesn't come up anymore.
Oh, wow. Well, anyone can email me. I still have the same email address. And I know the link is more complicated than it used to be, but all the work is there. And so just you can email me at tfield@med.miami.edu.
Great. That's great. And one more thing. I think it's amazing you've done 168 interviews in the last like year, 2 years. With media all over the world. And, you know, we're so grateful that you took time for our little show today because, Dr. Field, you really have trailblazed Touch Research Institute in our country and around the world. And you really are an iconic leader, I'm going to say, in our little world of massage therapy. And we're just so honored that you joined us today. And I can't wait to see you again in the future.
And I can't wait to see you too, CG. Thanks so much for this great time with you.
It was wonderful. Thank you so much, Dr. Field. I hoped you enjoyed listening and learning from Dr. Tiffany Field today on the large amount of research that proves massage therapy is a powerful tool for supporting health and wellness in all of us. We have some amazing guests coming up in the next few months, so please join us on the next episodes of Outside the Room. I've so enjoyed spending this time with you today. From my heart to your heart, namaste.